The hour of 10:15 having arrived, I will call the Taxes Committee meeting to order when we have a quorum. We're quite close, actually. So let's go, first of all, well, we should go House File 874 first, but we're going to go House File 331 first. Representative Newton, if you could please come to the table here. Okay, welcome to the Tax Committee, Representative Newton. I will move House File 331. If you could please describe your bill for us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill. The issue was brought to me by a constituent who gambles at one of our Native American casinos. And he's wondering why it is that when he won a large amount, I think $10,000, he's taxed on that amount, but he proceeded to lose the same amount or more over a period of time, and is wondering why he cannot deduct that amount from his taxes. So this is actually a tax conformity issue. The federal law does permit this, and we're looking for some conformity. And we have Mr. Cummings, I think, from Revenue, who would like to testify.
Mr. Cummings?
Is he here?
I did see him here somewhere. Representative Newton, I thought maybe you would advise your constituent, because we do give advice from time to time to our constituents. Maybe he should have quit while he's ahead, possibly. Mr. Cummings, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I spoke to Representative Newton yesterday about this provision. The AMT is an alternative tax computation that is meant to ensure taxpayers who benefit from certain tax advantages pay a minimum amount of tax. The AMT is computed at a lower rate than the regular tax, but is applied to a wider base of income. For regular tax purposes, gambling losses are allowed as an itemized deduction up to the amount of gambling winnings reported by the taxpayer as income. And you know, there's certain rules for what is a session.
Okay, Mr. Cummings, please hold that thought. I will officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Carlson L. Moves the minutes of February 12th. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now, I will officially move House File 331. Mr. Cummings, please continue.
For AMT, thank you, Mr. Chair. For AMT purposes, gambling losses are allowed as a deduction for the federal AMT, but not for the Minnesota AMT. This bill will allow the same deduction when computing the Minnesota AMT. Taxpayers subject to AMT with gambling losses at times file a federal Schedule C, profit or loss from business, which would be applicable when there is one in the business of gambling. The department adjusts a lot of these returns as a result of audits. Accordingly, the bill may reduce the number of audits and appeals due or handles on these schedules. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the time to address these issues. We look forward to continuing to work with you as you consider bills like these.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Are you here as a resource person today, or are you an advocate, or what's the department's actual position?
Mr. Chair, we are here as a resource.
Here as a resource. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Does Mr. Newton know what that means, actually? It's yes. A rough day here. Okay. Yes. Okay. So any questions for Mr. Newton from members or Mr. Cummings? I think we kind of know what this does. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns? Okay. With that, then, I will move that House File 331 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you,
Chair.
Mr. Cummings. What I think I'll do at this... Okay. Representative Loon, if you could join us. I guess you don't have to join us. You're already here.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to ask...
Representative Carlson.
Who do we thank for the rolls?
House File 874.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, welcome to your committee. Representative Loon moves House File 281. If you could please present your bill, and I think Mr. Cummings has some comments on this also, but you also have a witness. So,
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Tax Committee. And, Mr. Chair, if at whatever point you would like, I do have an author's amendment.
Okay. Let me get that. Let's, Representative Loon, to get the bill in the shape she would like, moves the H.O. 281A1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Just logistically here, let's see what we have. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify for this bill or with concerns or has traveled more than 50 miles from the Capitol? Okay, that means we can go here. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. House File 281 deals with extending the research and development credit to sole proprietors, and we've heard some other legislation similar before the committee. This is a little bit different just in that, and I'll explain also the amendment that we just put on. In extending the R&D credit to sole proprietors would require them to apply to DEED, our Department of Employment and Economic Development, for certification that the expenses for which they are seeking the credit are qualified research expenses. The amendment clarifies that that requirement would only extend to sole proprietors, not to other types of businesses that are available to the credit. So just to make that clarification. And basically the way the credit would work is that it would I would propose that this policy would take effect beginning with tax year 15, and then a sole proprietor would apply to DEED to get their research expenses certified that they are indeed eligible for the credit, and to do that by September of the following year. So they would file an amended return then to get the R&D credit. And, you know, as we've heard before from other testimony, this is an important component in terms of encouraging our high-tech businesses and research that's done. Unfortunately, and I think the witness who will testify next, a member of their association, Mr. Gross, who has been here and provided some very compelling testimony about the importance of sort of growing and encouraging our high-tech companies and the importance of research that comes with that. And I think this is, again, just a sensible way of trying to extend this credit back to these sole proprietors. This did exist a long time ago in our state, back in the 80s, I believe, and I think it's an important provision that we revive and extend into our tax code.
Thank you, Chair Loon. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Genevieve Plumidor here with Life Science Alley, here representing the medical device biopharmaceutical industries in Minnesota.
Well, Ms. Plumidor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, Minnesota's R&D tax credit has leveraged investments here in the state, and it is an important economic tool that the state has utilized to attract those investments here. As Representative Loon alluded, Mr. Mark Gross, who's the CEO of Formacote, which is one of our members, was unable to make it here, but he has been before this committee many times before with a very compelling story about the type of work that he is doing, which is very similar to the same R&D that is happening in many of our big shops, Medtronic, St. Jude, Boston Scientific, but unfortunately because of this loophole in the law is unable to take advantage of the R&D tax credit. So we as an association are very supportive. As you know, we employ 48,000 direct jobs here in Minnesota, but it's that 120,000 indirect jobs that would Mr. Gross's company would fall under that we also represent, and it's all of the ecosystem that has built around our industry here. So we are very supportive of this bill, and we take any questions if needed.
Any questions of Ms. Plumidor? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I understand that we had this something similar to this in the past. Can you tell me how much of the workload of this is with the Department of Energy and Economic or Employment and Economic Development that has to accept these applications and then has a pretty short turnaround time to verify that, you know, these are legitimate purposes for which to claim the credit? And it looks like it's just a paper review. Is there no expectation that there should be, you know, periodic, you know, sampling audits or that sort of thing, rather than just most fiscal things we tend to sometimes require more than just a statement by the taxpayer?
Loon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler. You know, I have not been contacted with any concerns or to have a conversation with Deed about any concerns they have about that. And, you know, to be honest, this is Senator Russ's bill in the Senate, and I have not, I understand that they heard the bill perhaps in the Senate Tax Committee, but I am not aware if any of those concerns were raised. So I'll have to get back to you on that.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I mean, I just think we have to not cost shift to other budgets when we can avoid it, and just to make sure that it is a legitimate audit authority that's been given to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Mr. Cummings, did you wish to testify on this bill? Thank you, Ms. Pomodoro. Please state, Representative Loons.
I have one more testifier as well, Mr. Chairman.
Why don't you have him join us here? Mr. Cummings, please state your name to the representative director, please, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the tax policy manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I spoke to Representative Loon last night about this provision. First,
what'd she say?
I think there was a sense of partnership and a sense of possibility. So,
Mr. Cummings.
First, the bill extends a tax credit for increasing R&D to individuals' trust in the state. Second, the bill creates a new step for taxpayers claiming the R&D credit. The step requires an application and approval process through Deed to determine the claimed expenses or qualified research expenses. Mr. Chair and members, the R&D credit can be difficult for many to calculate. In the department's experience with administering this credit, we find many credits require adjustment because taxpayers have difficulty in accurately calculating the credit. So this might be even more pronounced if we get to the smaller and smaller type of people claiming the credit. In addition, the use of the R&D credit in Minnesota Statute Section 290.068 limits the credit to the amount of tax imposed on the entity creating the credit. So this Minnesota provision reflects the Internal Revenue Code provision to limit the credit to the tax applicable to the income of the trader business. So this Minnesota limitation provision was written when only corporations were allowed the R&D credit. So in the future, we would like to discuss this, if it would be appropriate that the credit could only be used against the income of the trader business rather than that of a spouse. This bill requires a new process that will need to be developed and implemented between Deed and DOR to implement and monitor the credit approval. One issue that we would seek additional clarification on is whether DOR would retain authority to audit the amount of the R&D credit certified by Deed. Currently, all items reported on a tax return are subject to audit in the appropriate circumstances. So we would like to continue that discussion as well. If the Department of Revenue is the agency that continues to be responsible to verify the R&D expenses, the Deed certification process would add extra steps for the taxpayer seeking to claim the tax credit. So we'd be seeking additional clarification there as well. We appreciate the opportunity to work with you and members of the committee on this, Representative Loon. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to address the committee today.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Any questions for Mr. Cummings? Representative Earhart?
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to read between the lines. Do you favor, not favor? Do you think something about this? Do you think this might be good? Or do you just outright are baffled at me?
Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, you know, when Mr. Gross came in, the documentation that we received from Mr. Gross and that we've received otherwise really showed a business that would fall in line with many others who had received the R&D credit. As we seek to, if the committee would like to move towards sole proprietors, I think I'm just here to say that there's some additional things that we would like to work with the committee on so that we can make sure it's in line with other R&D credits and to make sure that the taxpayers claiming it would be able to accurately claim it. So, and I think we can work in a way to do that, but I know that right now we do have concerns at this point. I shouldn't say that word. We're just a resource.
You can have concerns.
We're not. We don't have. We're just a resource.
We understand the department hates it.
No. We're just a resource.
Just a resource. Okay. Mr. Cummings, you mentioned that one of the issues you need to be looking at is being able to claim the spouse's income. What were you referring to there, sir?
We don't. On the federal side, we believe that there's a limitation that you'd be able to not be able to claim the credit against the income of a spouse. We don't believe that currently under the bill that there's that limitation. So you could be able to claim the R&D credit against the income of a spouse, say if there was a loss or something in the business.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to any other questions for the department? Thank you very much, Mr. Cummings, for your testimony. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Carnival, McGrand J. Carnival Law Firm, representing the Minnesota High Tech Association, and I just want to go on record to support this bill, much like Medical Alley or a new name, Life Science Alley, now does. Many of the entrepreneurs are individuals who have not yet gone through incorporation and would be beneficiaries of this bill, so we strongly support it as well. Be happy to take your questions.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Carnival? Thank you, Mr. Carnival. And I think members realize this, but just to note that Chair Anderson has carried bills on the same issue this year, and so we'll see how those all can match up in working with the department to see what the committee would like to do there. Okay, any other questions for Representative Loon? I think we pretty much understand what's going on here. Okay, with that, Representative Loon moves House File 281 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Loon. Item next, we have House File 531. Representative Swazinski moves House File 531. Representative Swazinski, do you have any amendments? Did you want to move the A1 amendment?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to move the A1.
Okay, Representative Swazinski has moved the 531, the bill. He now moves the H0531 A1 amendment to get it in the format that he would like. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill amended. And I think, members, I probably should have said, I believe we amended the Newton bill. To correct the record, House File 331 is laid over for possible inclusion in the House tax bill as amended. I don't believe I said that. So to clear the record up, didn't we amend that, Joel?
No.
Oh, I take that back.
281 you did.
We amended something around here.
281.
Oh, and I never said as amended, did I? Okay. Just let's clear up the record. House File, Representative Loon moves House File 281 as amended to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. So that 331 was not amended, 281 was amended. We now have House File 531 as amended. If you could please present the bill, the gentleman from Lyon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee this morning. House File 531, in a way, is a clarification bill of what we feel it actually was the legislative intent by the legislature, which is to exempt governmental agencies, schools, local units of government from sales tax and the purchases of material. But current law doesn't really work in reality. The way that contracts are signed between cities and contractors when work is being done, or schools and contractors when work is being done through lump sum contracts, the purchases are not made by the city. Purchases are often made by the contractor, who is a taxable entity. This bill moves and create a situation and a process in which the cities can benefit from their tax-exempt status and move it into law so that local cities, local property taxes do not have to be raised to pay this tax. There's a large encumbrance, quite a lot of paperwork that's involved, and a lot of the entities simply lay their tax-exempt status on the table because of the work involved to receive this up the tune of you know, $16 million a year. So with that, we have we'd be open to questions. Otherwise, we have a few testifiers that like to come talk about their issues and why this bill is important to them. So.
Okay, I think we'll take testimony. I have on the list a Mr. Keith Carlson, a Patrick Hines, Glenn Olson, Brad Roos, I believe. Is there anyone else? If you folks could, maybe I'll come forward and get some chairs around there or be there so we can call on you quickly here. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on behalf of this bill?
I'll let you go first.
Or with concerns? Okay, then we'll go with the folks we have. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patrick Hines. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities, and I'm testifying in support of Representative Swedzinski's bill. I'd like to thank him for carrying it. There are a number of organizations who also support this bill, including the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Minnesota School Boards Association, the City Engineers Association, the Minnesota Municipal Utility Association, as well as Metro Cities. And as Representative Swedzinski indicated, this is really a streamlining of current process that cities and other exempt entities must follow when they're claiming a sales tax exemption on construction materials. Current statute exempts construction materials unless they're purchased as part of a lump sum contract. And those lump sum contracts are typically the contracts that are used by cities or any owner of a construction project when contracting with general contractors. So in order for a general contractor to purchase materials exempt from the sales tax on behalf of the city must follow a very onerous process that's laid out in rules and various revenue notices from the department. They must, first of all, solicit separate bids for labor and materials, which is very different than the traditional general contracting bid model. This will require cities to determine quantities before they let bids. Cities must also reserve the right to award separate bids for labor and material. So you would have a situation, as an example, if you were resurfacing a road, you would have one bituminous company awarded the bid for the material and a second company awarded the bid for the application of the asphalt. That's very inefficient, and it can create problems for the city and for the oversight of the project. If a general contractor is going to purchase on behalf of a city, it must also be designated as the purchasing agent. This requires additional contract work, and the biggest problem it causes is that the revenue rules require the city to take on the risk of loss for those materials. Traditionally, when you enter into a construction contract, the general contractor is responsible for all aspects of the project. He's responsible for subcontractors, for suppliers, and ultimately responsible for any damage of materials or delays caused by material. When the city has to take on this risk, that greatly increases our exposure if there is a lawsuit regarding a project, and it increases our costs. And we have two gentlemen here from Marshall who will talk about that a little more. But to summarize the process, it's really so onerous that many exempt entities simply don't claim the exemption because the tax savings are not worth the other costs that they incur. And you can see this very clearly in the fiscal note, because the Department of Revenue estimates if we streamline the process, it will cost the state approximately $16 million a year in general fund money, which is the sales tax that's being paid on otherwise exempt construction materials. And when we originally introduced this bill, we simply were going to repeal the rules that the Department of Revenue had enacted over the years and streamlined it as an upfront exemption. The Department of Revenue had concerns about that, and we worked with them and decided to offer up a bill that would use the existing refund process that Revenue already administers. So if the bill were to pass now, an exempt entity could have the contractor purchase materials on behalf of the city, and at the end of the project, the contractor would submit documentation to the city, and the city would apply for a refund to the Department of Revenue. This is the same process that's currently laid out in statute in 297A.75, and we think this would be a big improvement over current law. It would allow cities and exempt entities to take advantage of the sales tax exemption that they were granted, and would still allow the Department of Revenue to have the necessary oversight to make sure the process was working correctly. And I'll stand for any questions, or the other testifiers can certainly come
up. Okay, I think we'll split this up in two. I think we'll go to Mr. Carlson next for your testimony, then we'll open up for questions for the two, and then we'll go to the gentleman from Marshall. And if I remember correctly, Marshall, orange and black, Tigers?
Yep.
Tigers? Mm-hmm. I don't have a hat like that, but, and I'm not going to get one.
There's rules.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm executive director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association, which consists of 10 greater Minnesota counties, basically in the regional centers, and four of the ring counties here in the metropolitan area. And I also want to thank Representative Swedzinski for introducing this bill. Mr. Hines has gone through the current process to get the sales tax exemption on construction materials is quite complicated. And most importantly, you give up your recourse against the general contractor should there be some failure at that site, which is invariably results in almost all local governments, as well as, I believe, the nonprofits foregoing the availability of this exemption under current law. From county's point of view, this is particularly important on road and bridge projects, something that we believe is a priority for the session. Right now, because there will always be an issue if there are failures with the installations of roads or bridges as to who's at fault, the contractor who erected or installed the materials or the supplier of the materials, local governments don't want to get into the middle of that. And consequently, we give up the exemption so that if there such a situation occurs, we can go against the general contractor's performance bond or insurance and let him or her resolve that with the supplier of the materials. Consequently, this bill would be a substantial improvement and would also reduce the cost of the many transportation projects that occur every year. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. We do support this bill enthusiastically.
Okay. I will start out with Chairman Chesky. First question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to think about this a little bit. Representative Swedzinski, I see your Senate author is actually the person who authored the sales tax article where this all became law. So, obviously she must be supportive since it's her bill, but I do want you to know, Representative Swedzinski, that, I think in preliminary testimony, and I'm not sure if it was you or someone else who said, that the state government cut the sales tax for the local units of government, which was true and is a huge tax cut that was embedded in a tax bill that we passed. It sounded like, the benefit of that really didn't happen, and I don't think that's accurate. I think that was a $150 million tax cut per year. So our local units of governments are getting significant tax cuts as a result of that law change. And this relatively on the price day, you can see, is a small component of that. So for members who voted for that tax bill, and I know there's a lot of people here who didn't, but for those who did, you absolutely gave all the local units of government a huge tax cut, thereby reducing some property tax pressure. And I will say, to the testifiers, it's disappointing it wasn't more, quite frankly. And, Representative Swedzinski, one question for you is, how are we going to get this tax cut to this group turned around to the taxpayers? Because that really is the goal, ultimately, is to take the pressure off the locally elected officials so they won't raise property taxes. And I mean this truly nonpartisan, because I've been very frustrated, and people know this about me who know me well. We do a lot of things to try to reduce property taxes around here. And quite frankly, it's not been very productive.
Works.
I mean, between... you know, giving local units of governments the ability to not have to have the sales tax, local government aid. We have done county program aid. We keep trying, and we did see, contrary to what people say, we did see a cut in property taxes for the first time in a dozen years, and that was mostly because we instituted a huge circuit breaker at the state level. We raised state taxes to turn around and pass refunds onto our citizens. And 95% of Minnesotans receive those refunds if they apply for them. So it's really been the state stepping in and writing checks to make those property taxes go down. And as a former council member in my community, I certainly know the pressures of local units of government, and they were playing catch-up. But you know, maybe you can tell me, how are we going to get this tax relief ultimately down to the taxpayers? Because what else would be the purpose? I mean, why would we be doing this if it wasn't so our citizens would pay less in property taxes? Can you comment, sure, maybe have some insights on that? Because I haven't been very successful.
Well, you know, I
think... Gentleman from Lyon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Chair Lincheski. I think, you know, that is the battle that we do have. We have separation in government. We have different levels of government. And I think, you know, what we have in general is some static dissidence between our constituents of cities and counties that are maybe not paying attention to the situation, what's going on, and not demanding from their locally elected officials what they should be. And, you know, I think those are the, I think any one of us can comment to that scenario. And, you know, whether that's just involvement then from our folks with their elected officials and demanding, saying, hey, you know, the city stepped in and gave you this tax relief. You know, I think some of the conversations have been levy limits and talking about those things. I don't necessarily agree with that. I believe that, you know, local units of government should be held accountable for what they do. And, you know, if that's raising it when state comes in and gives those dollars to it. But, you know, I think we're open to ideas. But, you know, I think you're saying the same frustration that I do, that sometimes these dollars don't necessarily get down to the folks. But, you know, it's cost savings. At the end of the day, this is about savings dollars to end projects. And the city of Marshall will be coming up here with a couple of large projects that they're doing, hundreds of thousands of dollars that are up and above beyond because the projects are so large. And, you know, whether that be construction folks that work in the construction trades, whether that be contractors, business people, you know, just access, whether it be a water project, you know, those are ways, you know, whether it be a Lewis and Clark, we talk about, you know, the state stepping in and essentially doing a large project through cash to fund water to local businesses. You know, I think at the end of the day, most folks do see that, whether it be in a dollar amount form or in reduced costs or prices in the things that they buy.
Chair Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, thank you for that. And, I, you know, I really, in a nonpartisan way, I find it so difficult to really move the dial on property taxes, Mr. Chair. And Representative Draskowski, good luck. You know, the two of you, I know, will do your best. And we've certainly been trying. And, again, I know people want to say something that isn't accurate, but property taxes did go down for the first time in 12 years. And it took hundreds of millions of dollars at the state level to make that happen. And we are partners with our local units of government. And Mr. Chair Davids and Chair Draskowski, you know, I think you will find it a frustrating exercise to try to think about how these things will lower property taxes. And Mr. Chair, if I may, I was hoping to ask Ms. Dalton if she could maybe educate the committee a little bit, and I may have this wrong, so she'll educate me too. But, you know, it used to be, Mr. Chair, that when Speaker Swiggum was here, there used to be this formula that was sort of informal in the tax committee that if you put $2 in at the state level, you got $1 in property tax relief in local government aid. That was sort of what people believed. Then there was a study done, I think, by Speaker Swiggum that said, let's actually go in and find out if that's true. And again, maybe Ms. Dalton can correct me, but I think the numbers came back that actually that wasn't quite true. It was probably you had to put in $2 to get property taxes to go down $1 of local government aid. Now, I don't know. I think in the sales tax, we've thought as decision makers that when you put $1 into a sales tax cut for a local unit of government, you're going to get $1 in property tax reduction. You know, I'd like to see if that's actually accurate, because we did that last year to the tune of $150 million a year. We did everybody except the Met Council and somebody else. I can't remember who it was. We couldn't quite fit it in the size of the bill, but I, you know, I didn't see that in turn go down. So maybe Ms. Dalton can tell us about that. The other thing is, I think the testifiers are talking about a problem they're having, and Mr. Chair, I hear that problem, and I would also ask Ms. Dalton to tell us if there have been other cities or developments who have received the treatment that they're asking for, and I think there have, and I'm ready to be corrected, but I'm pretty sure the Mall of America Phase 2 got exactly what they're asking for. I think the Vikings did, and I think DMC did, which are, you know, let's deal with this lump sum issue for contractors, as has been laid out, so that the local units of government don't take the pressure. And so if Ms. Dalton can comment on, do we get a buck of property tax release when we lower the sales tax? And then also, do other have there been other developments or cities who've had this sort of treatment already? And I, you know, because I do support it. I just, it's frustrating, I guess. Thank
Ms.
you.
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I really wish I had an answer to the first question asked by Representative Lynchewski. It is one that the property tax analysts in the microdata user group that works on doing property tax projections struggles with perennially. We have looked at a lot of the academic literature. We have done some of our own analysis. At this point in time, our best guess is that it's about 50 cents on the dollar of tax of direct tax relief becomes property tax relief. The rest of it becomes spending. As I said, that's our best guess. There is not a definitive answer out there. Related to whether we allow an exemption for contractors, subcontractors, and builders in other projects, we have an entire section of statute with a this would be the 49th subdivision in it where we do specifically allow the exemption for builders, contractors, and subcontractor purchases. Virtually all of them do require a refund on those purchases. A good majority of them have been for the private sector, but there's also been a number for the public sector. You mentioned the Viking Stadium. We also have one for jail construction. So we do have, and we've done some for some special publicly owned utilities.
Chair Lynchewski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a clarification question and probably for Mr. Hines, although anybody could answer it. And just, I think I heard in your testimony that this is really a refund program in which the contractor then will verify to the entity, whether it's a nonprofit or a city, exactly what was purchased for their particular project, and that would be the information that would be given for the refund. So if I understand that correctly, and so please clarify this for me, if a contractor buys a lot of, say, 1,000 steel steel studs or sheetrock, but they only need 500 for the project, they would verify that they only bought 500, and that would be the amount that would be refundable, correct?
Gentleman from Lyons.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Petersburg, yeah. I mean, essentially, that's the stopgap. I think that was the language is really from that auditing standpoint of why they're doing the pass-through, and that is so that they can, otherwise, that would be, I think the anecdotal idea would be that, hey, this contractor went out and bought 1,000 studs and only needed 500, but he was able to potentially gain the system and not pay sales tax on those other 500 studs. And through that, I mean, that's the auditing standpoint. That's that checks and balances portion of the bill that I think kind of makes everyone a little more comfortable with it. So,
Representative Petersburg?
Thank you. That was my clarification. I thought I heard that. I just want to make sure. Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just heard Representative or Chair Lynchewski say that the property taxes had gone down because of the legislature from some of the work that they did the last couple of years, and maybe that's I misheard that. I didn't hear that in my district. And so then I looked up how did property tax do in 2014. And on the Minnesota Department of Revenue's website, it states that in cities, they went up 2.1%. Counties went up 1.5%. Townships went up 2.1%. Schools went up 2.6%. Special taxing districts went up 2.3%. So all the evidence that I've heard throughout the year and then on the campaign trail and then just looking at their websites shows that we had a property tax increase.
not a decrease, unless my data is incorrect. With that, I support your bill. Representative, I support that. Yeah.
Chair Lincheski, since your name was mentioned, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, you know, I guess I don't know what to formally request, but I have been frustrated this year with, and you know, I'm guilty of making mistakes too, but I have been frustrated with the amount of things that are empirically provable that people are saying that aren't accurate. And you know, I have been trying not to call people out on it, but you know, property taxes did go down. Maybe you want to ask the Department of Revenue to come up and explain what the, how the refund program works, so that if a city council member raises the property taxes, then we give you a refund, so that that's not, so your taxes don't go up. But you know, I wouldn't have said it if it wasn't true. Trust me, I've been trying to work on it for a long time, and mostly the Republicans and the Democrats have tried to make property taxes go down, and many of the years that has not happened, and in fact it's finally has happened. And I would ask nonpartisan people maybe to sit down with members who want to know more to understand that. You know, I with all due respect to you know, Representative Anderson, and she'll be able to respond because now I said her name. Mr. Chair, we had a different meeting where Representative Anderson said the tax bills that were passed last time were regressive, and that's also empirically not true. And I'm happy to show you the tax incidence fiscal analysis of the overall tax bill. It had regressive components, but it was an overall very progressive tax bill. I heard Representative Barrett, and now he can respond too, say that there was in the 2013 a provision for the Vikings. That is not accurate, and I'm happy to sit down and walk through the entire spreadsheet for the 2013 tax bill so that people can see there was nothing for the Vikings in there. There was not $350 million for the Vikings in there, as was stated on the tape in this committee, Mr. Chair. The Majority Leader Pepin said on the House floor, and I did go over and talk to her, that you know, the Democrats didn't pass tax conformity till March. You know, not true either. In fact, I read a lot of members, you know, updates they provide and says, you know, we did this really timely, and the Democrats didn't do it till March, and that's not accurate. People, Mr. Chair, you know the difference between one-year tax extenders for federal conformity and permanent federal conformity, and we did federal conformity twice. We did the one-year extenders that were done just this year. We did it when we were in charge. We passed it in February. It was signed into law, just like you. Then we did permanent federal conformity in the omnibus tax bill. And so, you know, it is frustrating, and I would say this to Democrats who are doing it too. Members, you know, are saying things that aren't accurate. And it's different than having a philosophical viewpoint of whether high taxes make people leave the state or make the state stronger. You know, that's an opinion. But there are things that are actually factual that are not disputable when people review the correct information. And so it's frustrating. Like I said, you know, we've been here quite a while together, a couple months now, Mr. Chair, and I mostly hear them and watch them go past me. But I do think we all should try harder to check with people before we assert things that really are not subjective. So, you know, I apologize, and I know Representative Anderson and Barrett and others will want to talk, but I am happy to provide that on the committee website, the incident study of the last tax bills. I'm happy to provide if you would allow it, on the committee website, the lack of Vikings legislation in the tax bills. I'm happy to provide the information on the committee website to show that the last tax bills passed did reduce property taxes, and the information that the majority leader was talking about federal conformity not happening till late. You know, we have plenty of fodder, Mr. Chair, against each other, just straight up on philosophy. We don't need to also mix it up with things that aren't accurate. So I appreciate you letting me take the time. I've been thinking about it for a number of weeks, as you can tell, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Lincheski. Representative McDonald, you still have the floor?
That is all. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Yeah. Representative Lincheski, I want to ask you. So you said that you passed conformity last year in February. What about in 2014?
Chair Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask Mr. Michael to, you know, I think it's better to go through a nonpartisan source to talk about what the conformity was for 13 and 14. And we're talking about when the House passed it.
Mr. Michael?
Okay, well, there's a discrepancy. So now I understand the difference, because last year the conformity bill was held up because of the Senate office building. It didn't get enacted until March. So when there's this, I don't think anyone's lying here, Representative Lencheska. I just think it's a matter of, but it is a matter of fact that tax filers don't say, geez, the House of Representatives passed the conformity bill. I can now file my streamlined taxes with federal conformity. It's not how it works. It's when it became law. And so last year, because of, and it wasn't your fault, but it is factually accurate that conformity did not pass until the end of March last year, primarily because of the dust-up over the Senate office building. Now, I don't think that attributing it to having it pass the House of Representatives is really a fair statement. That's not what tax filers don't get to use conformity just because the House of Representatives passes something. I wish they did. I wish we could do that. That'd be great. But, well, we can't do that.
Chair Lencheski.
Mr. Chair, again, you know, we can do this elsewhere, but, you know, people can go back and watch the tapes. That's not what the majority leader said on the House floor. And, you know, again, maybe, you know, Mr. Chair, we're way off the bill, but if you want to have Mr. Michael explain to people what the difference is between a one-year tax extender and federal conformity or permanent conformity, which are different issues, and in fact, legislators are talking about them as if they're the same thing. And until a few years ago, most legislators didn't even know what federal conformity meant. And Mr. Chair, thank you. You're one of the chairs who's made it a priority. And it's about time this legislature understands what federal conformity is. But we got people walking around like one-time extensions and permanent federal conformity are the same thing. In fact, Congress is getting ready, Mr. Chair, as you know, to pass another one. So just like you passed federal conformity early in the session, thank you, and we all did it together. I think everybody voted for it, and we didn't play the amendment game. Congress is getting ready to do it again, and you're going to have to do more federal conformity in your omnibus tax bill, and I hope you will, unless they don't act, but it sure looks like they're getting ready to. So, you know, I'm just saying, you know, when I go back and re-listen to the tapes to hear people say things, because I think, did they really just say that? I wouldn't bring it up if they didn't really just say the House didn't do X, not it didn't become law. And I do think these things matter, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Did you want Mr. Michael to make a few comments? Or? Okay. Well, why don't you? Since we will get back to your bill eventually here.
Mr. Chair, they only drove 3.5 hours to get here.
Yeah, so. They got a lot of time. They'll wish they had less time. But, Mr. Michael, I think Representative Lencheska brings up some very important points here. Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chair, I'm sort of hesitant to do this from memory because there have been too many conformity bills that have passed over the last 2 years that I don't remember what months they passed in, and so I think that the committee probably would be wise to move on to the testimony. We can provide that in writing.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Michael. Okay, to the gentleman from Lyon, to his bill, I believe we have a Mr. Glenn Olson and the Brad Roos. Is it Roos or?
Roos, thank you, Mr.
Roos. Okay, for Marshall, Minnesota, home of the mighty Tigers, the orange and black. Okay, who would like to go first?
Well, I'll go first, Mr. Chairman. Chairman and the committee, thank you for allowing us to come and testify on House File 531. We thank you, Chris, for sponsoring this important bill. So you might wonder, what is local government in southwest Minnesota doing for which the bill would assist us in providing the needed funds to accomplish any of these tasks?
If you could please introduce yourself and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you. My name is Brad Rose. I'm the general manager, Marshall Municipal Utilities.
Thank you, sir.
In your packet, I provided a synopsis of a 2014 raw water main project that we constructed to bring a new source of water to Marshall. Southwest Minnesota is challenged in finding adequate water supply, and Marshall is not one of those communities that can participate in the Lewis and Clark project. We're too far out of the watershed of the Missouri River. So we found another source, and in 2014 harvested that source, brought it to our community, the community that works with a lot of water-related industry. During the contracting phase of the project, we became aware that we were not going to be able to follow the lump sum method of contracting that is the norm. we were able to separately pull out the pipe only and purchase that ourselves. We employed then people to safeguard the pipe, purchased our own insurance to insure against the risk until the pipe was properly installed. And we did that in 2014. Had we had the benefits of the language being offered in House File 531, we would have also been able to claim an additional amount of sales tax exemption on the remaining material that we were not able to claim. That would have yielded about $150,000 of additional sales tax exempt. Those dollars then, because we couldn't claim them, are provided by our water customers, and to the point, dollar for dollar, that'd be $150,000 we would not have to collect from our water customers had that exemption been in place. So we are supportive of this attempt to fix in law and grant the ability to get the sales tax exemption for the water-related purchases. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And before we go into questions, let's go to Mr. Olson's testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, to allow us to testify on this bill. I believe that you have already in your packets a written letter from our city administrator, Mr. Ben Marte. I'm here to...
And, sir, I apologize. If you please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
I'm sorry. Glenn Olson, Public Works Director for the City of Marshall.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you.
Now, and before you go on with your testimony, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on behalf of the Swedzinski bill or with concerns? Okay. Please proceed.
Thank you. You've got the letter from our city administrator, Mr. Marte. I wanted to just talk to you a little bit about our projects and our taxes in southwest Minnesota. Our community is a little bit exceptional in that most recently we passed two tax increases for the development of a couple of major projects in the city, one being our Southwest Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, two-sheet ice arena, and one of the sheets will be a convention center type operation in the summer months of that facility. But in that development of the project, we have both a design and a construction management operation for that facility. And we just let those contracts in the tune of about $13.5 million on 32 separate contracts that we're entering into. And so you can identify with us the difficulty utilizing the existing tax structure of how to save that tax money for the materials on 32 different projects on our one project. And we had estimates developed for that project, and of course, over the development of a project like that that takes multiple years, it took us about 2 years to develop that, costs rise, and the taxes on those materials rise because of the cost. And in this project, we came out about $400,000 short in our coffers for the building of the facility that we have to come up locally. It just so happens that that $400,000 is the same dollar amount as the materials taxes. So if, in fact, we were allowed to get that reimbursement back, it actually covers the additional expense that we have to come up with locally for the project. We also have, on a regular basis, somewhere between $5 and $10 million worth of construction in the city of Marshall that we could also take advantage of that on our individual projects on an annual basis, of which for this year it happens to be about one project that's about $5 million in itself. Now that doesn't seem maybe like a lot in a big community, but in a community like Marshall, it's a huge dollar amount. It's a huge amount for us to come up with in local taxpayer money to fund those projects that have been approved by the local taxpayer. So I get pretty passionate about stuff like this, but you can see that the legislature has tried to present laws that allow us to do it, but become so cumbersome that we don't, either for liability or for process. But we congratulate you for trying to make this a possibility for us, because that does, maybe it not, doesn't reduce taxes directly, but reduces the taxes ultimately, because we're putting all of that money into materials and labor and paying the people that are doing the work in Marshall. That's all.
You drove a long ways. You can keep going. I was in Marshall at the Pizza Ranch. And do you still have that?
Yes, we do. And it's a real becoming a Southwest Minnesota regional area facility. And we need all the help we can get. But our people commit themselves to the
Pizza
development.
Ranch?
Okay. And they still have pizza. We ate there yesterday.
You did? It's so good, and so good for you. I was at the top of my class, but it was a very small class. Very small. Actually, I was number 7. But, okay, so thank you for your testimony. Questions for Mr. Olson or Mr. Roos from committee members? Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Olson, just quickly, you had passed two different taxes for these projects. Were they through the capital improvement planning process, or were they lease purchase financing?
Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Are you speaking specifically about the finance options? They passed two different tax increases for local sales tax, one for operations. Yeah, they were by referendum. If that was the question.
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Olson.
Any other questions for any of the witnesses, from members? Anyone else wish to testify for the bill or with concerns? Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you for coming to the Capitol today.
Thank you for having us.
So, Representative Swazinski renews his motion that House File 531 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Swazinski.
Thank you.
Item next, and our last item on the agenda for today, House File 874, a RERIC bill. I will move House File 874. I believe there is an amendment, so I will, to get the bill in the shape the author would like, I'll move the 80874A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Passes barely. Okay, with that, we have 874 before us as amended. Mr. Rerick, welcome to the Tax Committee. And so if you could describe what your bill is doing as amended, and then we will go into testimony. Just to kind of get an idea here, is there anyone else other than the gentleman at the table that wishes to testify on behalf of or with concerns on this bill as amended? Okay. And Mr. Rerick, apparently the word got out, and thank you for the treats and snacks. You know, generally when we have folks from Marshall, we get like Schwan's ice cream or something. I'm not sure what happened there.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Sweet?
Yeah.
Or the gentleman from Lyon?
Mr. Chair, your opportunity for Schwan's ice cream will come before the session is over, sir.
Okay, thank you.
With root beer from New Ulm. So.
Thank you, the gentleman from Lyon. Okay, please present your bill, sir, as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. For the record, I'm Representative Jason Rerick, and I'm bringing forward House File number 874. First, I'd like to apologize to the city of Mora. I couldn't come up with a creative way to bring a treat related to the Vasalopa cross-country ski race or the Dollar Horse, so I went with the world-famous caramel rolls from Phobie's in Hinckley. So, this bill...
And thank you. That's a very wise move.
House File 874 is basically the same thing that we were just discussing with House File 531. It is specific to a project in the city of Mora in regards to a wastewater treatment facility. The reason we are bringing this bill forward is because their project begins before the effective date of House File 531, and they would not be able to take advantage of that. So we are bringing forward this bill to give them an effective date of January 1 so that the materials on their project can be tax exempt also. And at this time, I would I introduce the city administrator from Mora, Joel Dine, and he can give you some specifics on their project.
Sure. Could you please spell your last name for the record?
Dine, D-H-E-I-N.
Could you do that again? D-H?
D-H-E-I-N.
Oh, okay. Okay. How's everything in the home of the Mighty Mustangs? Going okay?
Yes, pretty good.
Okay, that's good. Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Sure. My name is Joel Dine. I'm the city administrator for the city of Mora. So Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of House File 874. The project that we're discussing is a wastewater treatment facility upgrade. The project is driven mostly by the requirements of our discharge permit to treat phosphorus, plus some sludge, solid handling, and biosolid handling, and efficiency improvements. The city recently opened the bids on this project, and the apparent low bidder has a bid amount of $5,328,900. Based on our engineer's experience and estimates, that equates to a little over $206,000 in sales tax that we would be paying on taxable materials and equipment for this project. As you've heard before, we're aware that this these materials are already tax exempt, but the process is just too cumbersome for us and probably would be more expensive having separate bids for materials and labor and taking responsibility for all the equipment and managing that during the construction process. That's why we're asking for this this legislation. We know that the Department of Revenue has concerns, and that's why we feel a compromise of getting a refund at the tail end of the project is a reasonable compromise for both parties. Getting this exemption up would have a great impact on our customers. We have little over 1,200 customers, and they would see significant savings in us not having to borrow the money to pay the sales tax, which could equate to a couple months of sewer charges for our some of our customers. So I really don't have a whole lot to say unless you have any questions. Thank you for the opportunity.
We will have give members time to ask questions. Does the department wish to testify on this bill at all? Or okay. Any questions for Mr. Dine? Okay, with that, I will renew my motion that House File 874, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Members, before we adjourn tomorrow, there's the Baker bill, House File 550 on propane. There's the Davids estate tax bill, and there's the Davids bill to freeze the inflator on tobacco products. So you may want to come and get your seats early because that usually packs the auditorium here. So with that, a good government all the time. We are adjourned.